Instead, he sat on one of the long seats, his hand terminal open. Julie's case file, what he had reconstructed of it, glowed before him. The picture of her, proud and smiling in front of the Razorback. The dates and records. Her jiu-jitsu training. It seemed like very little, considering how large the woman had grown in his life. A small news feed crawled down the terminal's left side. The war between Mars and the Belt escalated, incident after incident, but the secession of Ceres Station was the top news. Earth was taken to task by Martian commentators for failing to stand united with its fellow inner planet, or at least for not handing over the Ceres security contract to Mars. The scattershot reaction of the Belt ran the gamut from pleasure at seeing Earth's influence fall back down the gravity well, to strident near panic at the loss of Ceres's neutrality, to conspiracy theories that Earth was fomenting the war for its own ends. Miller reserved judgment. I always think of pews. Miller looked over. The man sitting next to him was about Miller's age, the fringe of gray hair, the soft belly. The man's smile told Miller the guy was a missionary, out in the vacuum saving souls. Or maybe it was the name tag and Bible. The seats, I mean, the missionary said. They always make me think of going to church, the way they're all lined up, row after row. Only instead of a pulpit, we have bunk beds. Our Lady of Sleeping Through It, Miller said, knowing he was getting drawn into conversation, but unable to stop himself. The missionary laughed. Something like that, he said. Do you attend church?
Haven't in years, Miller said. I was a Methodist when I was anything. What flavor are you selling?
The missionary lifted his hands in a gesture of harmlessness that went back to the African plains of the Pleistocene. I have no weapon. I seek no fight. I'm just going back to Eros from a conference on Luna, he said. My proselytizing days are long behind me.
I didn't think those ever ended, Miller said.
They don't, not officially. But after a few decades, you come to a place where you realize that there's really no difference between trying and not trying. I still travel. I still talk to people. Sometimes we talk about Jesus Christ. Sometimes we talk about cooking. If someone is ready to accept Christ, it doesn't take much effort on my part to help them. If they aren't, no amount of hectoring them does any good. So why try?
Do people talk about the war? Miller asked.
Often, the missionary said.
Anyone make sense of it?
No, I don't believe war ever does. It's a madness that's in our nature. Sometimes it recurs, sometimes it subsides.
Sounds like a disease.
The herpes simplex of the species? The missionary said with a laugh. I suppose there are worse ways to think of it. I'm afraid that as long as we're human, it will be with us. Miller looked over at the wide, moon-round face.
As long as we're human? He said.
Some of us believe that we shall all eventually become angels, the missionary said.
Not the Methodists.
Even them, eventually, the man said. But they probably won't go first. And what brings you to Our Lady of Sleeping Through It? Miller sighed, sitting back against the unyielding chair. Two rows down, a young woman shouted at two boys to stop jumping on the seats and was ignored. A man behind them coughed. Miller took a long breath and let it out slowly.
I was a cop on Ceres, he said.
Ah, the change of contract.
That, Miller said.
Taking up work on Eros, then?
More looking up an old friend, Miller said. Then, to his own surprise, he went on. I was born on Ceres. Lived there my whole life. This is the fifth? Yeah, fifth time I've been off station.
Do you plan to go back?
No, Miller said.
He sounded more certain than he'd known.
No, I think that part of my life is pretty much over.
That must be painful, the missionary said. Miller paused, letting the comment settle. The man was right. It should have been painful. Everything he'd ever had was gone. His job, his community,
He wasn't even a cop anymore, his checked-in luggage handgun notwithstanding. He would never eat at the little East Indian cart at the edge of Sector 9 again. The receptionist at the station would never nod her greeting to him as he headed in for his desk again. No more nights at the bar with the other cops. No more off-color stories about busts gone weird. No more kids flying kites in the high tunnels. He probed himself like a doctor searching for inflammation. Did it hurt here? Did he feel the loss there? He didn't. There was only a sense of relief so profound it approached giddiness. "I'm sorry," the missionary said, confused. "Did I say something funny?" Eros supported a population of 1.5 million, a little more than Ceres had in visitors at any given time. Roughly the shape of a potato, it had been much more difficult to spin up, and its surface velocity was considerably higher than Ceres's, for the same internal G. The old shipyards protruded from the asteroid, great spiderwebs of steel and carbon mesh studded with warning lights and sensor arrays to wave off any ships that might come in too tight. The internal caverns of Eros had been the birthplace of the belt. From raw ore to smelting furnace to annealing platform, and then into the spines of water haulers and gas harvesters and prospecting ships. Eros had been a port of call in the first generation of humanity's expansion. From there, the sun itself was only a bright star among billions. The economics of the belt had moved on. Ceres Station had spun up with newer docks, more industrial backing, more people. The commerce of shipping moved to Ceres, while Eros remained a center of ship manufacture and repair. The results were as predictable as physics. On Ceres, a longer time in dock meant lost money, and the berth fee structure reflected that. On Eros, a ship might wait for weeks or months without impeding the flow of traffic. If a crew wanted a place to relax, to stretch, to get away from one another for a while, Eros was the port of call. And with the lower docking fees, Eros Station found other ways to soak money from its visitors. Casinos, brothels, shooting galleries. Vice in all its commercial forms found a home in Eros, its local economy blooming like a fungus fed by the desires of belters. A happy accident of orbital mechanics put Miller there half a day ahead of the Rocinante. He walked through the cheap casinos, the opioid bars and sex clubs, the show fight areas where men or women pretended to beat one another senseless for the pleasure of the crowds. Miller imagined Julie walking with him, her sly smile matching his own as he read the great animated displays. Randolph Mack, holder of the belt free fight championship for 6 years against Martian Kivrin Carmichael in a fight to the death. Surely not fixed, Julie said dryly in his mind. Wonder which one's going to win, he thought, and imagined her laughing. He'd stopped at a noodle cart. 2 new yen's worth of egg noodles and black sauce steaming in their cone, when a hand clapped on his shoulder. "Detective Miller," a familiar voice said. "I think you're outside your jurisdiction." "Why, Inspector Semitimba," Miller said, "as I live and breathe. You'd give a girl the shakes sneaking up like that." Semitimba laughed. He was a tall man, even among belters, with the darkest skin Miller had ever seen. Years before, Semitimba and Miller had coordinated on a particularly ugly case. A smuggler with a cargo of designer euphorics had broken with his supplier. 3 people on Ceres had been caught in the crossfire, and the smuggler had shipped out for Eros. The traditional competitiveness and insularity of the station's respective security forces had almost let the perp slip away. Only Miller and Semitimba had been willing to coordinate outside the corporate channels. "What brings you?" Semitimba said, leaning against a thin steel railing and gesturing at the tunnel, "to the navel of the belt, the glory and power that is Eros." "Following up on a lead," Miller said. "There's nothing good here," Semitimba said. "Ever since Protogen pulled out, Things have been going from bad to worse. Miller sucked up a noodle.
Who's the new contract? He asked.
CPM, Sematimba said.
Never heard of them.
Carne pa la máquina, Sematimba said, and pulled a face. Exaggerated bluff masculinity. He thumped his breast and growled, and then let the imitation go and shook his head.
New corporation out of Luna.
Mostly belters on the ground. Make themselves out to be all hardcore, but they're mostly amateurs. All bluster, no balls. Protogen was inner planets, and that was a problem, but they were serious as hell. They broke heads, but they kept the peace. These new assholes? Most corrupt bunch of thugs I've ever worked for. I don't think the Board of Governors is going to renew when the contract's up. I didn't say that, but it's true.
I've got an old partner signed up with Protogen, Miller said.
They're not bad, Sematimba said. Almost wish I picked them in the divorce, you know?
Why didn't you? Miller asked.
You know how it is. I'm from here.
Yeah, Miller said.
So, you didn't know who was running the playhouse? You aren't here looking for work?
Nope, Miller said. I'm on sabbatical. Doing some travel for myself these days.
You've got money for that?
Not really, but I don't mind going on the cheap. For a while, you know.
You heard anything about a Juliet Mao? Goes by Julie?
Sematimba shook his head.
Mao Kukowski Mercantile, Miller said. Came up the well and went native. OPA. It was an abduction case.
Was?
Miller leaned back. His imagined Julie raised her eyebrows.
It's changed a little since I got it, Miller said. Maybe connected to something. Kind of big.
How big are we talking about? Sematimba said. All trace of jocularity had vanished from his expression. He was all cop now. Anyone but Miller would have found the man's empty, almost angry face intimidating.
The war, Miller said.
Sematimba folded his arms.
Bad joke, he said.
Not joking. I consider us friends, old man, Sematimba said. But I don't want any trouble around here. Things are unsettled as it stands.
I'll try to stay low profile.
Sematimba nodded. Down the tunnel, an alarm blared. Only security, not the ear-splitting diatone of an environmental alert. Sematimba looked down the tunnel as if squinting would let him see through the press of people, bicycles, and food carts.
I'd better go look, he said with an air of resignation.
Probably some of my fellow officers of the peace breaking windows for the fun of it.
Great to be part of a team like that, Miller said.
How would you know? Sematimba said with a smile.
If you need something.
Likewise, Miller said, and watched the cop wade into the sea of chaos and humanity. He was a large man, but something about the passing crowd's universal deafness to the alarm's blare made him seem smaller.
A stone in the ocean, the phrase went. One star among millions.
Miller checked the time, then pulled up the public docking records. The Rocinante showed as on schedule. The docking berth was listed. Miller sucked down the last of his noodles, tossed the foam cone with a thin smear of black sauce into a public recycler, found the nearest men's room, and, when he was done there, trotted toward the casino level. The architecture of Eros had changed since its birth. Where once it had been like Ceres, web-worked tunnels leading along the path of widest connection, Eros had learned from the flow of money. All paths led to the casino level. If you wanted to go anywhere, you passed through the wide whale belly of lights and displays. Poker, blackjack, roulette, tall fish tanks filled with prized trout to be caught and gutted, mechanical slots, electronic slots, cricket races, craps, rig tests of skill. Flashing lights, dancing neon clowns, and video screen advertisements blasted the eyes. Loud artificial laughter and merry whistles and bells assured you that you were having the time of your life. all while the smell of thousands of people packed into too small a space competed with the scent of heavily spiced vat-grown meat being hawked from carts rolling down the corridor. Greed and casino design had turned Eros into an architectural cattle run, which was exactly what Miller needed. The tube station that arrived from the port had 6 wide doors which emptied to the casino floor. Miller accepted a drink from a tired-looking woman in a G-string and bared breasts, and found a screen to stand at that afforded him a view of all 6 doors. The crew of the Rocinante had no choice but to come through one of those. He checked his hand terminal. The docking log showed the ship had arrived 10 minutes earlier. Miller pretended to sip his drink and settled in to wait. Chapter 23. Holden. The casino level of Eros was an all-out assault on the senses. Holden hated it.
"I love this place," Amos said, grinning.
Holden pushed his way through a knot of drunk middle-aged gamblers who were laughing and yelling to a small open space near a row of pay-by-the-minute wall terminals.
"Amos," he said, "we'll be going to a less touristy level, so watch our backs. The flophouse we're looking for is in a rough neighborhood."
Amos nodded.
"Gotcha, Cap."
While Naomi, Alex, and Amos blocked him from view, Holden reached behind his back to adjust the pistol that pulled uncomfortably on his waistband. The cops on Eros were pretty uptight about people walking around with guns, but there was no way he was going to Lionel Polanski unarmed. Amos and Alex were both carrying too, though Amos kept his in the right pocket of his jacket, and his hand never left it. Only Naomi flatly refused to carry a gun. Holden led the group toward the nearest escalators, with Amos casting the occasional glance behind in the rear. The casinos of Eros stretched for 3 seemingly endless levels, and even though they moved as quickly as possible, it took half an hour to get away from the noise and crowds. The first level above was a residential neighborhood and disorientingly quiet and neat after the casino's chaos and noise. Holden sat down on the edge of a planter with a nice array of ferns in it and caught his breath.
"I'm with you, Captain. 5 minutes in that place gives me a headache," Naomi said and sat down next to him.
"You kidding me?" Amos said. "I wish we had more time. Alex and I took almost $1,000 off those fish at the Tyco card tables. We'd probably walk out of here fucking millionaires."
"You know it,"
Alex said and punched the big mechanic on the shoulder.
"Well, if this Polanski thing turns out to be nothing, you have my permission to go make us $1,000,000 at the card tables."
"I'll wait for you on the ship," Holden said.
The tube system ended at the first casino level, and didn't start again until the level they were on. You could choose not to spend your money at the tables, but they made sure you were punished for doing so. Once the crew had climbed into a car and started the ride to Lionel's hotel, Amos sat down next to Holden.
"Somebody's following us, Cap," he said conversationally. "Wasn't sure till he climbed on a couple of cars down. Behind us all through the casinos, too."
Holden sighed and put his face in his hands.
"Okay, what's he look like?" he said.
"Belter. 50s or maybe 40s with a lot of mileage. White shirt and dark pants. Goofy hat."
"Cop?"
"Oh, yeah. But no holster I can see," Amos said.
"All right, keep an eye on him, but no need to get too worried. Nothing we're doing here is illegal," Holden said.
"You mean other than arriving in our stolen Martian warship, sir?" Naomi asked.
"You mean our perfectly legitimate gas freighter that all the paperwork and registry data says is perfectly legitimate?"
Holden replied with a thin smile.
"Yeah, well, if they'd seen through that, they would have stopped us at the dock, not followed us around."
An advertising screen on the wall displayed a stunning view of multicolored clouds rippling with flashes of lightning, and encouraged Holden to take a trip to the amazing dome resorts on Titan. He'd never been to Titan. Suddenly he wanted to go there very much. A few weeks of sleeping late, eating in fine restaurants and lying on a hammock, watching Titan's colorful atmosphere storm above him sounded like heaven. Hell, as long as he was fantasizing, he threw in Naomi walking over to his hammock with a couple of fruity-looking drinks in her hands. She ruined it by talking. "This is our stop," she said. "Amos, watch our friend, see if he gets off the train with us," Holden said as he got up and headed to the door. After they got off and walked a dozen steps down the corridor, Amos whispered, "Yep," at his back. Shit. Well, definitely a tail, but there wasn't really any reason not to go ahead and check up on Lionel. Fred hadn't asked them to do anything with whoever was pretending to be the Scopuli's owner. They couldn't very well be arrested for knocking on a door. Holden whistled a loud and jaunty tune as he walked, to let his crew and whoever was following them know he wasn't worried about a thing. He stopped when he saw the flophouse. It was dark and dingy, and exactly the sort of place where people got mugged or worse. Broken lights created dark corners, and there wasn't a tourist in sight. He turned to give Alex and Amos meaningful looks, and Amos shifted his hand in his pocket. Alex reached under his coat. The lobby was mostly empty space, with a pair of couches at one end next to a table covered with magazines. A sleepy-looking older woman sat reading one. Elevators were recessed into the wall at the far end, next to a door marked stairs. In the middle was the check-in desk, where, in lieu of a human clerk, a touch-screen terminal let guests pay for their rooms. Holden stopped next to the desk and turned around to look at the woman sitting on the couch. Graying hair, but good features and an athletic build. In a flophouse like this, that probably meant a prostitute reaching the end of her shelf life. She pointedly ignored his stare. "Is our tail still with us?" Holden asked in a quiet voice. "Stopped outside somewhere. Probably just watching the door now," Amos replied. Holden nodded and hit the inquiry button on the check-in screen. A simple menu would let him send a message to Lionel Polanski's room, but Holden exited the system. They knew Lionel was still checked in, and Fred had given them the room number. If it was someone playing games, no reason to give him a heads up before Holden knocked on the door. "Okay, he's still here, so let's—" Holden said, and then stopped when he saw the woman from the couch standing right behind Alex. He hadn't heard or seen her approach. "You need to come with me," she said in a hard voice. "Walk to the stairwell slowly, stay at least 3 meters ahead of me the entire time. Do it now." "Are you a cop?" Holden asked, not moving. "I'm the person with the gun," she said, a small weapon appearing like magic in her right hand. She pointed it at Alex's head. "So do what I say." Her weapon was small and plastic and had some kind of battery pack. Amos pulled his heavy slug thrower out and aimed it at her face. "Mine's bigger," he said. "Amos, don't," was all Naomi had time to say before the stairwell door burst open and half a dozen men and women armed with compact automatic weapons came into the room, yelling at them to drop their guns. Holden started to put his hands up when one of them opened fire, the weapon coughing out rounds so fast it sounded like someone ripping construction paper. It was impossible to hear separate shots. Amos threw himself to the floor. A line of bullet holes stitched across the chest of the woman with the taser, and she fell backward with a soft, final sound. Holden grabbed Naomi by one hand and dragged her behind the check-in desk. Someone in the other group was yelling, "Cease fire! Cease fire!" But Amos was already shooting back from his position, prone on the floor. A yelp of pain and a curse told Holden he'd probably hit someone. Amos rolled sideways to the desk, just in time to avoid a hail of slugs that tore up the floor and wall and made the desk shudder. Holden reached for his gun, but the front sight caught in his waistband. He yanked it out, tearing his underwear, then crawled on his knees to the edge of the desk and looked out. Alex was lying on the floor on the other side of one of the couches, gun drawn and face white. As Holden looked, A burst of gunfire hit the couch, blowing stuffing into the air and making a line of holes in the back of the couch not more than 20 centimeters above Alex's head. The pilot reached his pistol around the corner of the couch and blindly fired off half a dozen shots, yelling at the same time.
"Fucking assholes!" Amos yelled, then rolled out and fired a couple more shots and rolled back before the return fire started.
"Where are they?"
Holden yelled at him.
"Two are down, the rest in the stairwell,"
Amos yelled back over the sound of return fire. Out of nowhere, a burst of rounds bounced off the floor past Holden's knee.
"Shit, someone's flanking us,"
Amos cried out, then moved farther behind the desk and away from the shots. Holden crawled to the other side of the desk and peeked out. Someone was moving low and fast toward the hotel entrance. Holden leaned out and took a couple shots at him, but three guns opened up from the stairwell doorway and forced him back behind the desk.
"Alex, someone's moving to the entrance,"
Holden screamed at the top of his lungs, hoping the pilot might be able to get off a shot before they were all chopped to pieces by crossfire. A pistol barked three times by the entrance. Holden risked a look. Their tail with the goofy hat crouched by the door, a gun in his hand, the machine gun-toting flanker lying still at his feet. Instead of looking at them, the tail was pointing his gun toward the stairwell.
"No one shoot the guy with the hat,"
Holden yelled, then moved back to the edge of the desk. Amos put his back to the desk and popped the magazine from his gun. As he fumbled around in his pocket for another, he said,
"Guy's probably a cop."
"Extra especially do not shoot any cops," Holden said, then fired a few shots at the stairwell door. Naomi, who'd spent the entire gunfight so far on the floor with her arms over her head, said,
"They might all be cops."
Holden squeezed off a few more shots and shook his head.
"Cops don't carry small, easily concealable machine guns and ambush people from stairwells. We call those death squads," he said, though most of his words were drowned out by a barrage of gunfire from the stairwell.
Afterward came a few seconds of silence.
Holden leaned back out in time to see the door swing shut.
"I think they're bugging out," he said, keeping his gun trained on the door anyway.
"Must have another exit somewhere. Amos, keep your eye on that door. If it opens, start shooting."
He patted Naomi on the shoulder. "Stay down." Holden rose from behind the now ruined check-in kiosk. The desk facade had splintered and the underlying stone showed through. Holden held his gun barrel up, his hands open. The man in the hat stood, considering the corpse at his feet, then looked up as Holden came near.
"Thanks. My name is Jim Holden. You are?"
The man didn't speak for a second. When he did, his voice was calm, almost weary.
"Cops will be here soon. I need to make a call or we're all going to jail."
"Aren't you the cops?" Holden asked. The other man laughed. It was a bitter, short sound, but with some real humor behind it. Apparently, Holden had said something funny.
"Nope. Name's Miller."
Chapter 24. Miller. Miller looked at the dead man, the man he just killed, and tried to feel something. There was the trailing adrenaline rush still ramping up his heartbeat. There was a sense of surprise that came from walking into an unexpected firefight. Past that, though, his mind had already fallen into the long habit of analysis. One plant in the main room so Holden and his crew wouldn't see anything too threatening. A bunch of trigger-happy yahoos in the stairwell to back her up. That had gone well. It was a slapdash effort. The ambush had been set by people who either didn't know what they were doing or didn't have the time or resources to do it right. If it hadn't been improvised, Holden and his three buddies would have been taken or killed, and him along with them. The four survivors of the Canterbury stood in the remains of the firefight like rookies at their first bust. Miller felt his mind shift back half a step as he watched everything without watching anything in particular.
Holden was smaller than he'd expected from the video feeds. It shouldn't have been surprising. He was an Earther. The man had the kind of face that was bad at hiding things.
Thanks. My name is Jim Holden. You are?
Miller thought of six different answers and turned them all aside. One of the others, a big man, solid with a bare scalp, was pacing out the room, his eyes unfocused the same way Miller's were. Of Holden's four, that was the only guy who'd seen serious gunplay before.
Cops will be here soon, Miller said. I need to make a call or we're all going to jail.
The other man, thinner, taller, East Indian by the look of him, had been hiding behind a couch. He was sitting on his haunches now, his eyes wide and panicky. Holden had some of the same look, but he was doing a better job of keeping control. The burdens, Miller thought, of leadership.
Aren't you the cops?
Miller laughed.
Nope, he said. Name's Miller.
Okay, the woman said. Those people just tried to kill us. Why do they do that? Holden took a half step toward her voice even before he turned to look at her. Her face was flushed, full lips pressed thin and pale. Her features showed a far-flung racial mix that was unusual even in the melting pot of the belt. Her hands weren't shaking. The big one had the most experience, but Miller put the woman down as having the best instincts.
Yeah, Miller said. I noticed.
He pulled out his hand terminal and opened a link to Semitimba. The cop accepted a few seconds later.
Semi, Miller said. I'm really sorry about this, but you know how I was going to stay low profile?
Yes, the local cop said, drawing the word out to three syllables.
Didn't work out. I was heading to a meeting with a friend.
A meeting with a friend, Semitimba echoed. Miller could imagine the man's crossed arms even though they didn't show in the frame. And I happened to see a bunch of tourists in the wrong place at the wrong time. It got out of hand.
Where are you? Semitimba asked.
Miller gave him the station level and address. There was a long pause while Semitimba consulted with some internal communication software that would have been part of Miller's toolset once. The man's sigh was percussive.
I don't see anything. Were there shots fired?
Miller looked at the chaos and ruin around them. About 1,000 different alerts should have gone out with the first weapon fired. Security should have been swarming toward them.
A few, he said.
Strange, Semitimba said. Stay put. I'll be there.
Will do, Miller said, and dropped the connection.
Okay, Holden said. Who was that?
The real cops, Miller said. They'll be here soon. It'll be fine.
I think it'll be fine, he thought. It occurred to him that he was treating the situation like he was still on the inside, a part of the machine. That wasn't true anymore, and pretending it was might have consequences.
He was following us, the woman said to Holden, and then to Miller she said,
You were following us.
I was, Miller said.
He didn't think he sounded rueful, but the big guy shook his head.
It was the hat, the big one said. Stood out some.
Miller swept off his pork pie and considered it. Of course, the big one had been the one to make him. The other three were competent amateurs, and Miller knew that Holden had done some time in the UN Navy. But Miller gave it better than even money that the big one's background check would be interesting reading.
Why were you following us? Holden asked.
I mean, I appreciate the part where you shot the people who were shooting at us, but I'd still like to know that first part.
I wanted to talk to you, Miller said. I'm looking for someone.
There was a pause. Holden smiled.
Anyone in particular? He asked.
A crew member of the Scopuli, Miller said.
The Scopuli? Holden said.
He started to glance at the woman and stopped himself. There was something there. The Scopuli meant something to him beyond what Miller had seen on the news.
There was nobody on her when we got there,
the woman said.
Holy shit, the shaky one behind the couch said. It was the first thing he'd said since the firefight ended, and he repeated it 5 or 6 more times in quick succession.
What about you? Miller asked.
Doniger blew you to Tycho, and now here. What's that about?
How did you know that? Holden said.
It's my job, Miller said. Well, it used to be.
The answer didn't appear to satisfy the Earther. The big guy had fallen in behind Holden, his face a friendly cipher. No trouble unless there was trouble, and then maybe a whole lot of trouble. Miller nodded, half to the big guy, half to himself.
I had a contact in the OPA who told me you didn't die on the Doniger, Miller said.
They just told you that? The woman asked, banked outrage in her voice.
He was making a point at the time, Miller said. Anyway, he said it, and I took it from there. And in about 10 minutes, I'm going to make sure Eero's security doesn't throw all of you in a hole, and me with you. So, if there's anything at all you want to tell me, like what you're doing here, for instance, this would be the right time.
The silence was broken only by the sound of recyclers laboring to clear the smoke and particulate dust of gunfire. The shaky one stood. Something about the way he held himself looked military. X-something, Miller assumed, but not a ground pounder. Navy, maybe. Martian, at a guess. He had the vocal twang some of them affected.
Ah, fuck it, Captain, the big one said. He shot the flank guy for us. He may be an asshole, but he's okay by me.
Thank you, Amos, Holden said. Miller filed that. The big one was Amos. Holden put his hands behind his back, returning his gun to his waistband.
We're here to look for someone, too, he said. Probably someone from the Scopuli. We were just double-checking the room when everyone decided to start shooting at us.
Here? Miller said. Something like emotion trickled into his veins. Not hope, but dread.
Someone off the Scopuli is in this flop right now?
We think so, Holden said. Miller looked out the flophouse lobby's front doors. A small, curious crowd had started to gather in the tunnel. Crossed arms, nervous glances. He knew how they felt. Semitimba and his police were on the way. The gunmen who'd attacked Holden and his crew weren't mounting another attack, but that didn't mean they were gone. There might be another wave. They could have fallen back to a better position to wait for Holden to advance. But what if Julie was here right now? How could he come this far and stop in the lobby? To his surprise, he still had his gun drawn. That was unprofessional. He should have holstered it. The only other one still drawn was the Martian's. Miller shook his head. Sloppy. He needed to stop that. Still, he had more than half a magazine left in the pistol.
What room? He asked.
The flophouse corridors were thin and cramped. The walls had the impervious gloss of warehouse paint, and the carpet was carbon silicate weave that would wear out more slowly than bare stone. Miller and Holden went first, then the woman and the Martian. Naomi and Alex, their names were. Then Amos, trailing and looking back over his shoulder. Miller wondered if anyone but he and Amos understood how they were keeping the others safe. Holden seemed to know and be irritated by it. He kept edging ahead. The doors of the rooms were identical fiberglass laminates, thin enough to be churned out by the thousands. Miller had kicked in 100 like them in his career. A few here and there were decorated by long-time residents, with a painting of improbably red flowers, a whiteboard with a string where a pen had once been attached, a cheap reproduction of an obscene cartoon acting out its punchline in a dimly glowing infinite loop. Tactically, it was a nightmare. If the ambushing forces stepped out of the doors in front of and behind them, all 5 could be slaughtered in seconds. But no slugs flew, and the only door that opened disgorged an emaciated, long-bearded man with imperfect eyes and a slack mouth. Miller nodded at the man as they passed, and he nodded back, possibly more surprised by someone's acknowledging his presence than by the drawn pistols. Holden stopped. "This is it," he murmured. "This is the room." Miller nodded. The others came up in a clump, Amos casually hanging back, his eyes on the corridor retreating behind them. Miller considered the door. It would be easy to kick in. One strong blow just above the latch mechanism. Then he could go in low and to the left, Amos high and to the right. He wished Havelock were there. Tactics were simpler for people who'd trained together. He motioned Amos to come up close. Holden knocked on the door.
"What are you—"
Miller whispered fiercely, but Holden ignored him.
"Hello?" Holden called. "Anyone there?"
Miller tensed. Nothing happened. No voice, no gunfire. Nothing. Holden seemed perfectly at ease with the risk he'd just taken. From the expression on Naomi's face, Miller took it this wasn't the first time he'd done things this way.
"You want that open?" Amos said. "Kinda do," Miller said at the same moment Holden said, "Yeah, kick it down."
Amos looked from one to the other, not moving until Holden nodded at him. Then Amos shifted past them, kicked the door open in one blow, and staggered back, cussing.
"You okay?" Miller asked.
The big man nodded once through a pale grimace.
"Yeah, busted my leg a while back. Cast just came off. Keep forgetting about that," he said.
Miller turned back to the room. Inside, it was as black as a cave. No lights came on, not even the dim glow of monitors and sensory devices. Miller stepped in, pistol drawn. Holden was close behind him. The floor made the crunching sound of gravel under their feet, and there was an odd astringent smell that Miller associated with broken screens. Behind it was another smell, much less pleasant. He chose not to think about that one.
"Hello?" Miller said. "Anyone here?"
"Turn on the lights," Naomi said from behind them. Miller heard Holden patting the wall panel, but no light came up.
"They're not working," Holden said.
The dim spill from the corridor gave almost nothing. Miller kept his gun steady in his right hand, ready to empty it toward muzzle flash if anyone opened fire from the darkness. With his left, he took out his hand terminal, thumbed on the backlight, and opened a blank white writing tablet. The room came into monochrome. Beside him, Holden did the same. A thin bed pressed against one wall, a narrow tray beside it. The bedding was knotted like the remnant of a bad night's sleep. A closet stood open, empty. The hulking form of an empty vacuum suit lay on the floor like a mannequin with a misplaced head. An old entertainment console hung on the wall across from the cot, its screen shattered by half a dozen blows. The wall was dimpled where blows intended to break the LED sconces had missed. Another hand terminal added its glow, and another. Hints of color started to come into the room. The cheap gold of the walls, the green of the blankets and sheet. Under the cot, something glimmered. An older model hand terminal. Miller crouched as the others stepped in.
"Shit," Amos said.
"Okay," Holden said. "Nobody touches anything. Period. Nothing." It was the most sensible thing Miller had heard the man say.
"Someone put up a bitch of a fight," Amos muttered.
"No," Miller said. It had been vandalism, maybe. It hadn't been a struggle. He pulled a thin film evidence bag out of his pocket and turned it inside out over his hand like a glove before picking up the terminal, flipping the plastic over it and setting off the sealing charge. "Is that blood?" Naomi asked, pointing to the cheap foam mattress. Wet streaks pooled on the sheet and pillow, not more than a finger's width, but dark, too dark even for blood.
"No,"
Miller said, shoving the terminal into his pocket.
The fluid marked a thin path toward the bathroom. Miller raised a hand, pushing the others back as he crept toward the half-open door. Inside the bathroom, the nasty background smell was much stronger. Something deep, organic, and intimate. Manure in a hothouse, or the aftermath of sex, or a slaughterhouse. All of them. The toilet was brushed steel, the same model they used in prisons. The sink matched. The LED above it and the one in the ceiling had both been destroyed. In the light of his terminal, like the glow of a single candle, black tendrils reached from the shower stall toward the ruined lights, bent and branching like skeletal leaves. In the shower stall, Juliet Andromeda Mao lay dead. Her eyes were closed, and that was a mercy. She'd cut her hair differently since she'd taken the pictures Miller had seen, and it changed the shape of her face. But she was unmistakable. She was nude, and barely human. Coils of complex growth spilled from her mouth, ears, and vulva. Her ribs and spine had grown spurs like knives that stretched pale skin, ready to cut themselves free of her. Tubes stretched from her back and throat, crawling up the walls behind her. A deep brown slush had leaked from her, filling the shower pan almost 3 centimeters high. He sat silently, willing the thing before him not to be true, trying to force himself awake. "What did they do to you?" he thought. "Oh, kid, what did they do?" "Oh, my God," Naomi said behind him. "Don't touch anything," he said. "Get out of the room. Into the hall. Do it now." The light in the next room faded as the hand terminals retreated. The twisting shadows momentarily gave her body the illusion of movement. Miller waited, but no breath lifted the bent ribcage. No flicker touched her eyelids. There was nothing. He rose, carefully checking his cuffs and shoes, and walked out to the corridor. They'd all seen it. He could tell from the expressions they'd all seen. And they didn't know any better than he did what it was. Gently, he pulled the splintered door closed and waited for Semitimba. It wasn't long. 5 men in police riot armor with shotguns made their way down the hall. Miller walked forward to meet them, his posture better than a badge. He could see them relax. Semitimba came up behind them. "Miller," he said, "the hell is this? I thought you said you were staying put." "I didn't leave," he said. "Those are the civilians back there. The dead guys downstairs jumped them in the lobby." "Why?" Semitimba demanded. "Who knows?" Miller said. "Roll them for spare change? That's not the problem." Semitimba's eyebrows rose. "I've got 4 corpses down there, and they're not the problem." Miller nodded down the corridor. "5th one's up here," he said. "It's the girl I was looking for." Semitimba's expression softened. "I'm sorry," he said. "Nah," Miller said. He couldn't accept sympathy. He couldn't accept comfort. A gentle touch would shatter him, so he stayed hard instead. "But you're going to want the coroner on this one." "It's bad, then?" "You've got no idea," Miller said. "Listen, Semi, I'm in over my head here. Seriously. Those boys down there with the guns? If they weren't hooked in with your security force, there would have been alarms as soon as the first shot was fired. You know this was a setup. They were waiting for these 4. And the squat fellow with the dark hair? That's James Holden. He's not even supposed to be alive." "Holden that started the war?" Semitimba said. "That's the one," Miller said. "This is deep. Drowning deep. And you know what they say about going in after a drowning man, right?" Semitimba looked down the corridor. He nodded. "Let me help you," Semitimba said, but Miller shook his head. "I'm too far gone. Forget me. What happened was you got a call,
You found the place. You don't know me. You don't know them. You've got no clue what happened. Or you come along and drown with me. Your pick. You don't leave the station without telling me? Okay, Miller said. I can live with that, Semitimba said. Then, a moment later,
That's really Holden?
Call the coroner, Miller said. Trust me. Chapter 25. Holden. Miller gestured at Holden and headed for the elevator without waiting to see if he was following. The presumption irritated him, but he went anyway. So, Holden said, we were just in a gunfight where we killed at least 3 people and now we're just leaving? No getting questioned or giving a statement? How exactly does that happen? Holden asked.
Professional courtesy, Miller said, and Holden couldn't tell if he was joking.
The elevator door opened with a muffled ding, and Holden and the others followed Miller inside. Naomi was closest to the panel, so she stretched out to press the lobby button, but her hand was shaking so badly that she had to stop and clench it into a fist. After a deep breath, she reached out a now steady finger and pressed the button. This is bullshit. Being an ex-cop doesn't give you a license to get in gunfights, Holden said to Miller's back. Miller didn't move, but he seemed to shrink a little bit. His sigh was heavy and unforced. His skin seemed grayer than before.
Semitimba knows the score. Half the job is knowing when to look the other way. Besides, I promised we wouldn't leave the station without letting him know.
Fuck that, Amos said. You don't make promises for us, pal. The elevator came to a stop and opened onto the bloody scene of the gunfight. A dozen cops were in the room. Miller nodded at them, and they nodded back. He led the crew out of the lobby to the corridor, then turned around.
We can work that out later, Miller said. Right now, let's get someplace we can talk.
Holden agreed with a shrug.
Okay, but you're paying.
Miller headed off down the corridor toward the tube station. As they followed, Naomi put a hand on Holden's arm and slowed him down a bit so that Miller could get ahead. When he was far enough away, she said,
He knew her.
Who knew who?
He, Naomi said, nodding at Miller. Knew her.
She jerked her head back toward the crime scene behind them.
How do you know? Holden said.
He wasn't expecting to find her there, but he knew who she was. Seeing her like that was a shock.
I didn't get that at all. He seemed like Mr. Cool all through this.
No, they were friends or something. He's having trouble dealing with it. So maybe don't push him too hard, she said. We might need him.
The hotel room Miller got was only slightly better than the one they'd found the body in. Alex immediately headed for the bathroom and locked the door. The sound of water running in the sink wasn't quite loud enough to cover the pilot's retching. Holden plopped down on the small bed's dingy comforter, forcing Miller to take the room's one uncomfortable-looking chair. Naomi sat next to Holden on the bed, but Amos stayed on his feet, prowling around the room like a nervous animal.
So talk, Holden said to Miller. Let's wait for the rest of the gang to finish up, Miller replied with a nod toward the bathroom.
Alex came out a few moments later, his face still white but now freshly washed.
Are you all right, Alex? Naomi asked in a soft voice.
5 by 5, XO,
Alex said, then sat down on the floor and put his head in his hands. Holden stared at Miller and waited. The older man sat and played with his hat for a minute, then tossed it onto the cheap plastic desk that cantilevered out from the wall.
You knew Julie was in that room.
How? Miller said.
We didn't even know her name was Julie, Holden replied. We just knew that it was someone from the Scopuli.
You should tell me how you knew that, Miller said, a frightening intensity in his eyes.
Holden paused a moment. Miller had killed someone who had been trying to kill them, and that certainly helped make the case that he was a friend. But Holden wasn't about to sell out Fred and his group on a hunch. He hesitated, then went halfway. The fictional owner of the Scopuli had checked into that flophouse, he said. It made sense that it was a member of the crew raising a flag. Miller nodded.
Who told you? He said.
I'm not comfortable telling you that. We believed the information was accurate, Holden replied. The Scopuli was the bait that someone used to kill the Canterbury. We thought someone from the Scopuli might know why everyone keeps trying to kill us. Miller said,
Shit.
And then leaned back in his chair and stared at the ceiling. You've been looking for Julie. You hoped we were looking for her, too. That we knew something, Naomi said, not making it a question.
Yeah, Miller said.
It was Holden's turn to ask why.
Parents set a contract to Ceres looking for her to be sent home. It was my case, Miller said.
So you work for Ceres Security?
Not anymore.
So what are you doing here? Holden asked.
Her family was connected to something, Miller replied. I just naturally hate a mystery.
And how did you know it was bigger than just a missing girl? Talking to Miller felt like digging through granite with a rubber chisel. Miller grinned humorlessly.
They fired me for looking too hard.
Holden consciously decided not to be annoyed by Miller's non-answer. So, let's talk about the death squad in the hotel.
Yeah, seriously, what the fuck?
Amos said, finally pausing in his pacing. Alex took his head out of his hands and looked up with interest for the first time. Even Naomi leaned forward on the edge of the bed.
No idea, Miller replied. But someone knew you were coming.
Yeah, thanks for the brilliant police work, Amos said with a snort. No way we would have figured that out on our own.
Holden ignored him. But they didn't know why, or they would have already gone up to Julie's room and gotten whatever they wanted. Does that mean Fred's been compromised? Naomi said.
Fred? Miller asked.
Or maybe someone figured out the Polanski thing too, but didn't have a room number, Holden said.
But why come out guns blazing like that? Amos said. Doesn't make any sense to shoot us.
That was a mistake, Miller said. I saw it happen. Amos here drew his gun. Somebody overreacted. They were yelling cease fire right up until you folks started shooting back. Holden began ticking off points on his fingers. So, someone finds out we're headed to Eros, and that it is related to the Scopuli. They even know the hotel, but not the room. They don't know it's Lionel Polanski either, Naomi said. They could have looked it up at the desk, just like we did.
Right. So they wait for us to show, and have a squad of gunmen ready to take us in. But that goes to shit, and it turns into a gunfight in the lobby. They absolutely don't see you coming, detective, so they aren't omniscient.
Right, Miller said.
The whole thing screams last minute. Grab you guys and find out what you're looking for. If they'd had more time, they could have just searched the hotel. Might have taken 2 or 3 days, but it could have been done. They didn't, so that means grabbing you was easier.
Holden nodded.
Yes, he said.
But that means that they already had teams here. Those didn't seem like locals to me.
Miller paused, looking disconcerted.
Now you say it, me either, he agreed.
So, whoever it is, they already have teams of gunmen on Eros, and they can redeploy them to come at a moment's notice to pick us up, Holden said.
And enough pull with security that they could have a firefight and nobody came, Miller said. Police didn't know anything was happening until I called them.
Holden cocked his head to one side, then said,
Shit, we really need to get out of here.
Wait a minute, Alex said loudly. Just wait a goddamn minute here. How come no one is talking about the mutant horror show in that room?
Was I the only one that saw that?
Yeah, Jesus, what was that all about?
Amos said quietly. Miller reached into his coat pocket and took out the evidence bag with Julie's hand terminal in it.
"Any of you guys a techie?" he asked. "Maybe we could find out."
"I could probably hack it," Naomi said. "But there's no way I'm touching that thing until we know what did that to her and that it isn't catching. I'm not pushing my luck by handling anything she's touched."
"You don't have to touch it. Keep the bag sealed. Just use it right through the plastic. The touch screen should still work."
Naomi paused for a second, then reached out and took the bag.
"Okay, give me a minute," she said, then set to work on it.
Miller leaned back in his chair again, letting out another heavy sigh.
"So," Holden said, "did you know Julie before this? Naomi seems to think finding her dead like that really knocked you for a loop."
Miller shook his head slowly.
"You get a case like that, you look into whoever it is. You know, personal stuff. Read their email, talk to the people they know. You get a picture."
Miller stopped talking and rubbed his eyes with his thumbs. Holden didn't push him, but he started talking again anyway.
"Julie was a good kid," Miller said, as if he were confessing something. "She flew a mean racing ship. I wanted to get her back alive."
"It's got a password," Naomi said, holding up the terminal. "I could hack the hardware, but I'd have to open the case."
Miller reached out and said, "Let me give it a try."
Naomi handed the terminal to him, and he tapped a few characters on the screen and handed it back.
"Razorback," Naomi said. "What's that?"
"It's a sled," Miller replied.
"Is he talking to us?" Amos said, pointing his chin at Miller. "'Cause there's no one else here, but I swear half the time I don't know what the fuck he's on about."
"Sorry," Miller said. "I've been working more or less solo. Makes for bad habits." Naomi shrugged and went back to work, with Holden and Miller now looking over her shoulders.
"She's got a lot of stuff here," Naomi said. "Where to start?"
Miller pointed at a text file simply.